up to 70% off. That's right, at Court Furniture Clearance Center. Get up to 70% off new retail prices and choose from a wide variety of previously leased furniture and decor for your home or office. Sofas from $199.99, bedroom sets from $399.99, dining sets from $299.99, and more. All items are Court certified, guaranteed, and in stock, ready for delivery or to take home today. Make the smart choice and visit one of our five locations in the DMV or go online at courtclearancefurniture.com. Mention Radio 20 and get 20% off.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma for Tuesday, June 21st, 2011. I'm your host, Heather Stegel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals to lead organizational change at Enclaria LLC. The Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority, and my goal with this show is to provide ideas and methodologies to help you do just that. Today, my guest is Faith Fuqua-Purvis. She's here to share how to find the courage to drive positive change and what it means to be a revolution of one. Faith is the founder of Synergetic Solutions. She is known for talking about the courage to change and being lion-hearted. She has been called the elephant whisperer based on her willingness to talk about the metaphorical elephants in the room. I know I've had a few of those in my lifetime. Faith holds a BA in industrial and organizational psychology, an MBA with a concentration in organizational behavior, as well as an MA in learning sciences, which intersects education and computer science. She brings a wealth of experience to her clients, having been a consulting professional for over 20 years, 17 of them being with Accenture and Deloitte. Faith brings her consulting and business experience, her collaborative mindset, her strategic viewpoint, her holistic thinking approach, and her passion for excellence to each client engagement. Faith, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
So I love this idea of the revolution of one. So can you tell me a little bit more about what that means?
I've always been a little bit, as you can get from the intro, a little bit of a cage rattler, a little bit of a person that says, you know, what's really going on here? What's happening? What does it take to drive change? And as I stepped back from my own career a couple of years ago to think about where I was, what I wanted to do, where I wanted to focus my time and energy, I started thinking about not just myself, but where business was. So I've had this background that's in the change arena, but also there have been so many things going on in the business arena. And a couple of years ago, there was this sort of sense of depression. It was when all of the layoffs were happening, and I kept feeling like people had lost their energy and lost the ability to think positively about what was happening. And it sort of started all these things going around in my head, and then I was asked by a colleague of mine to write a blog article for his website, and that kind of launched the whole thing because it crystallized in my mind that we really have every day the ability to make a choice, as I call it, whether you want to be a zero or a one. Do you want to be on or off? If you think about computers, it's all digital, it's zero and one, and it creates something at the end. But it's all of these inputs that are going together to create this large output, and it's all these series of zeros and ones. But we each have this choice that we make each day as we get up and say, how do I want to behave today? How do I want to act today? And it really started me thinking about my journey and where I was and how I can drive positive influence on those around me. So it was this concept again of I'm one person, but what can one person do and how can I influence those people around me? And if I can help work on flipping other people from zeros to ones, how can this cascade out? Does that make sense?
Yes. So who is it that can start a revolution then?
To me, it's really anybody. It's about, I think about, do you have head and heart? So do you have a certain amount of knowledge? Because you need to have information to make decisions. But do you have a passion for something? Do you feel something in your heart to say, I believe I can make a difference. I want to drive a change. But it's not trying to drive change from a destructive view to say, oh, I don't like this or this is negative or everybody else is wrong. It's trying to say, I have the ability to be positive in what I'm doing to spark different thoughts. We all react and interact with people every day, so we bring energy with us. And so how can I bring this positive energy to the people around me every day? So it can be work-related, it can be personal-related, but just saying, I want to make a difference in life.
Okay. You made me think of, you know, the people that we've all worked with who are the complainers of the universe.
Oh, yes.
You know,
oh, yes.
And it's not enough to complain. You have to want to do something about it.
Right, right. And I was actually thinking about this last week. I'm working with a client, and I'm facilitating a large discussion with a group of people going through a large transformation, and it was a lot of, well, our competition, or they have this, or we don't have this. And I kept trying to turn it around and challenge them to say, okay, for every time you get that statement and you say, we don't have, come back with, no, you can't match that one for one, but what are your strengths? And instead of focusing on the negative, say, how can I be proactive about changing this? And sometimes within business, it's just getting information up, in their case, up to corporate, to know, here's the problem. So if you're all grousing to each other, you know, it's not going to change. But if enough of you were reporting the same kinds of problems in the field, that's how you can make change happen. So, you know, corporate businesses make decisions based on the information they have. But if you're not doing anything about it and sharing that information about where problems are, they can't improve the decision-making process.
Sure. If you're not telling the truth to somebody who can actually make a difference with it, you're
right.
Spinning around in circles.
Right. Right.
Right.
Okay. So what? What do you want to do about it? You know, and then I also like to think about the concept. I learned this last year, an acronym for FEAR, and it was false expectations appearing real. And it resonated with me because that's so much of it is, are we worrying about things that haven't occurred yet? And do we take that energy and that we give to fear, and can we turn it onto something more positive to say, you know, I can't control this. Sometimes things just suck. I mean, let's just be real. It's not a good situation, but I can't control it. If I have no influence or no control, am I giving it the control by allowing it to impact what I'm doing and how I'm feeling? Or can I just say, okay, I don't want to give up my energy. I want to take my energy for something else.
Yeah. So it seems like we're kind of talking around this question, but how do you know when you need to start a revolution? How do you know when something needs to be changed?
That's, to me, a tipping point that everybody has to face internally. And I would challenge people to move the needle back and say, at an earlier point, we get frustrated about things, but a lot of people don't have the gumption to go out and do something about it. And I would challenge people to say, okay, if something's really bothering you and it takes your time and energy, it drains you in some way, back to the choice of, is it something I can control or not? So do I need to let it go? Or is it something I can have an influence about? And ask yourself, do I care? Why do I care? How can I have an influence on this? What action can I take? And what outcome am I looking for? And if you really feel like after you've answered those questions, there's something there that you have some sort of passion or energy that you can put towards, then to me there's enough there to move after it. If you're not getting any concrete answers, then you're probably going to fizzle out pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so back to this idea of finding the courage to drive this revolution, this change. What is it that requires courage about change?
Change is always going to be fraught with what you get called resistance or barriers. People will talk about the burning platform. I mean, we all want things to be different, but change is hard. We all know that even changing your diet or what you eat can be challenging. So there has to be, again, this tipping point that you're moving past. And courage means I might be rocking the boat. I might be having to stand up for something. Sometimes it can be things as simple as conversations that happen around your water cooler. So people are talking about something in a way that you internally are thinking, oh, well, maybe that's not a good thing to say, or they're talking about a person. But you have to feel like, I'm going to stand up for that situation, or I'm going to stand up for that person. And it takes a sort of ability to say, there's going to be consequences, but I'm going to deal with that consequences. I think we see a lot of this going on with children these days around issues around bullying and how some of those things I think, kind of come up and we become complacent about them. And we just kind of let things go by where maybe we should be standing up for somebody or standing up for a situation. But it takes, again, that internal courage to say, I'm going to stand up and do the right thing. I'm going to be accountable for this. I'm going to speak my mind. I'm going to defend this person. I'm going to sort of put my neck out there on the chopping block because it's the right thing to do, because I believe in what's happening or I believe in the situation. And so that all takes courage to do. It's easier to sit by it and not get involved. Absolutely is.
Right. So just thinking about this idea of, you know, why does driving change require courage? There, you talked a little bit about that FEAR acronym, about false evidence.
Appearing real.
Appearing real. And then I'm just thinking, you know, or you also talked about consequences. So I'm just thinking that I wanted to think through what are some of the consequences that people perceive might happen to them if they stand up and try to do something about what they see.
There can be direct consequences or indirect consequences. Sometimes I think people worry more about perception and how they will appear to others or the subtle cultural cues that you see. So what will people think about me? How will I be perceived? I mean, if you're doing something, you shouldn't be doing something that's causing you to have the significant impact of being let go or laid off. I mean, that's not the kind of the change that I want to focus on, because that would be doing something detrimental to the company to be in that position. But people will fear most often things related to that perception or what people think about them either intellectually or about their job. Again, it's easier to say, I'll just sort of stand over here and observe, and I'll have my side conversations with people that I trust, but I don't want to rock the boat because I don't know how people are going to respond to me. And a lot of
people having the meeting after the meeting.
Right, having the meeting after the meeting where they grouch about it, but then nobody wants to stand up and do anything about it in the meeting.
Right.
And sometimes I think, okay, but if enough of you are grousing, then you ought to know that somebody else has the same belief, and who's going to step forward first and have the conversation in an open manner. People can have it in a judgmental manner where you're saying, you know, this is right and this is wrong and everything's black and white. Mm-hmm. But if you put an idea out there, we often talk about trial balloons, and I don't know if you use that phrase, but put a concept out there to be discussed to say, you know, I was thinking maybe this, or have you observed this, or I had this impression, what would happen if, where you're placing a new concept out there to be discussed, and allowing people to be engaged with it without saying, this is absolutely the way it is. Because we all have different experiences. We all have different perspectives. And the more that you engage the intellectual part of it and the emotional part in it, and it's the joint problem solving, the more you're going to be able to tackle something significant.
So then, If change, driving change requires courage, then how do you build courage? Where do you find it?
I think that courage comes from multiple sources. People can feel that they have externally, if you think about people that are involved in the armed services, there are people that go into the services for a myriad of reasons. But once they're there, they're either driven internally or externally, and sometimes, again, that can be social pressure. It can be a belief system, I believe in something. So again, it can be externally driven or internally driven. I feel like people get to their own place of courage the more aligned you are in your own belief system. So the more that you have reconciled your sort of external life with your internal thoughts, the easier it is to kind of open your mouth. Because you're doing it more from those internal reasons. A lot of people initially are driven by external factors, but the more that we can pull it inside of ourselves and really understand our own motivations and our own belief systems and try and line up our actions to them, the easier it is to put that step forward. And
when you say that they try to align themselves with external factors, like what?
Let's see. Off the top of my head, if I have a certain set of behaviors or actions I'm supposed to take to be culturally acceptable in an organization, I may start taking actions that reflect that behavior set. So I see around me what's happening. I see the way people behave, and I will do certain things to line myself up. Does that make sense?
So trying to fit in with the culture.
Right, right. But saying sometimes, well, I'm seeing these behaviors in the culture, and they're destructive, because cultural attributes can be destructive. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to play that game because I see it's destructive. Takes that sort of internal fortitude to behave different.
So this idea of courage, you talked about aligning yourself more with your internal beliefs than the external culture, but maybe we could talk about some techniques or ways that people can be courageous. That makes sense?
Yeah, it does. To me, one of the first things that we need to do as individuals that many people don't do is stop and reflect. We're really, really busy these days. Everybody's busy. And it feels like we're trying to get caught up all the time, and we're always behind the eight ball. But I've observed that we don't take time for some of the strategic analysis in business that we need to have, and then some of that internal analysis. If we take the time and sort of stop and even do internal checklists. And we often talk about, you know, 3, 5, 10-year plans. But those plans might often be certain job title or certain position within a company or a certain income bracket. But are you plotting out sort of your life path to say, it's not just this dimension that I want, but what do I want for my whole life experience to be? How do I want to interact? How do I want to spend my time? You know, what would I want a day in my life to look like 3 years out? We often don't take the time to think about that forward-looking, nor do we stop and really assess what we've done today or how an action I took impacted somebody else. It's often, you know, this happened, and then I move on to the next thing, and this happened, I moved on to the next thing. But if you can stop and look back at my action I took today to say, okay, now if I'd done this differently, what might have been the outcome? If I'd done this differently, what might have been the outcome? And if I want outcome C, how could I have done that differently? And by doing that sort of internal reflection historically and then the proactive forward-looking path, you can better understand where you are in the gaps that you might be having between your internal measurement system and where you want to be.
So being clear about what you're trying to accomplish then in some way gives you the courage to do something about it?
Yes, and it's not just accomplish it in terms of jobs, but in terms of behavior and lifestyle and interactions with others. I mean, you'll hear the phrase, about, you know, what do you want to have on your headstone when you're gone. And we might talk about it for 2 minutes, but then we've moved on. Most people don't stop and really think, what does that mean? If I have somebody talk about me, what do I want the first three things to come to mind for their perception of me? And do my behaviors currently line up with that perception of how I want to be?
So, well, let's take a specific scenario, or, well, still it's going to be a general scenario, but let's be a little bit more specific. Like, for example, let's say that somebody is working on a team, and they're not the team leader, but the team leader is sort of creating dysfunction.
Oh, we never see that.
Never. In whatever way, how might somebody who, let's say, is their boss, or maybe is the boss of another group or something, but they're in a position where they don't have the authority in the situation. So, what might somebody like that do to try to change the direction that the team is going.
To me, the first thing you have to understand is why is that occurring? A lot of times we'll look at the what, but we don't spend enough time trying to analyze the why. Trying to understand, is there an individual personality characteristic in play? Are they threatened by something? Often people are reacting because they're threatened in some way. Are they being protective over turf? And really, sometimes it requires that step to have a conversation with them to say, help me understand. I see this is happening. Can you help me understand what's going on and how I can help you alleviate this pressure you're feeling? It's easier to say, this is dysfunctional and I need to come up with an intervention outside of that individual than to actually have the conversation with that person to really understand where they're at or what's happening with them. I mean, people can be overloaded. They can have things happening outside of work on a personal basis that are, you know, driving behaviors that we don't know. So, again, the first thing is I like to ask the question why, or three levels down. Why is this happening? What's triggering this behavior? Now, what's occurring and why is that triggering this behavior? Because you may find things that you were unaware of. There may be some things that are easy to fix, and there may be things that you have, again, no control over. But the better you understand that root cause and the drivers for it, the better you can come up with solving the right problem versus just solving the implication of that problem.
Right. And I think underlying what you're saying is this idea of not judging that person, not making it a character flaw.
Right.
Of that leader, let's say.
Right.
But identifying a specific behavior that they're doing
and
that would be better if they didn't do or if they did something different. And then I'm trying to figure out why they do that.
Some people are completely unaware that they're doing it. Completely unaware. And it's sometimes giving them the example. And again, non-threatening. And I think that comes back to, as I mentioned earlier, the concept of the head and the heart. Do I care enough to try and make a change? And I'm trying to help the bigger picture. So my motivation is positive. It's not that oh, you're broken or you're wrong. But I'm seeing this happen. I'm trying to understand what the causes are, and I want to help.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes
that's all it
takes. And
is there a piece of it in there that – I was going to say, is there a piece of it in there that is, and this is the consequence of that behavior, this is what the impact is?
I think so. I mean, it's a back to cause and effect. So here's root cause, here's what's driving it, and then here's the consequence of it. And there are people that will react to physical displays of emotion. There are people that can react negatively to, you know, a sense of authority. Do I know that a certain behavior I'm taking makes somebody uncomfortable? I may not know. We all have different comfort zones. And it's an awareness of that and an acceptance of that. And sometimes it's, you know, canvassing the people around them, you know, sort of an informal 360, but you have to do it in a way that it's
you're not on a witch hunt.
Right, no, not on the witch hunt. I was trying to think of the right words. I'm thinking pure intention. It's trying to understand, and we often don't like to talk about how people make us feel at work. We just avoid that. But it's part of how we behave and we react. And we all have hot buttons. And the better I can understand, I hit Joe's hot button, and it's a hot button, and then I can let it go easier. And I just know it is, and it's sort of one of those, it exists, it's there. You know, does Joe know it's a hot button? He may not know it, but once I've had that conversation with him and he recognizes it, he can monitor himself a little bit better. So there's two sides of it. I'm able to let go of the issue quicker, and then Joe is able to kind of manage his own behaviors a little bit better. Because most people I've worked with, we don't, you know, aren't out to be malicious or mean. Most people are not. Most people aren't out to be hurtful. They don't know the consequences of some of the actions they take. and how they've impacted other people. And I think, to me, that's back to the, you know, zero and one, and are you understanding that what you do and how you behave impacts people around you all the time? It's almost like we've become desensitized to that.
Right.
We're running around all
the
day knocking people over, you know, it's like, I got to get done. Like, just get out of my way, you know?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to add that just in my own experience of having difficult conversations with people, my imagination of how what the impact is going to be or the consequences to me are going to be end up being far worse in my head than they are in real life when I actually have the conversation. We always tell ourselves the story of, well, they're going to, you know, it's going to be a career-limiting move if I speak up and say something or, you know, they're going to say I'm not a team player or, you know, other things that we tell ourselves, and it ends up usually being not so bad. And even if it's something like that, you know, if people say you're not being a team player, you can say, well, you have a strange definition of team player then, you know. but
it comes back to the intention to me. And, you know, none of us are perfect. No one is perfect. And there'll be times you try and do the right thing and it's, you know, you'll do it in the wrong way. But for most people, if you still understand that intention was right, they'll let the wrong way go.
Right.
But when people go in because they want to manipulate other people or they're trying to control the situation, you know, for their optimal output without caring about the rest of it, you know, most of us see through that. You know, there's some people that are pretty good at it. It takes a little while to figure out that's what they're doing. But most of us see through that stuff pretty quick. And teams will gel better when they feel that they've built this sense of trust in each other. I've observed so much trust is broken these days, trust between individuals, trust between teams, trust within an organization. And once you've lost that trust, it's really hard to get back. It takes several positive experiences before you start to even believe and start to consider bringing trust back into the equation.
Yeah. So let's...
No witch hunts.
No witch hunts.
No witch hunts.
Let's tie a bow on this and just summarize the revolution of one idea.
To me, it begins really within your own character and within your own heart to say, I want to make a difference. I want to make a difference in my own life because part of it is causing change within yourself. I want to have a positive influence on those around me. I know I'm not perfect, but I'm going to try and do better. I found that, you know, even for myself, sometimes it's cutting myself some slack. And I say, okay, when you can't be a whole, be a half. Sometimes I can't run at a full one, but, you know, can I do a half? Can I bring the positive energy to my interactions versus I think of the energy vampires. You can kind of get in a room and there's somebody who just sucks the life out of the room. Whereas there's other people that kind of either bring a sense of purpose or a sense of calm or a sense of understanding to those interactions. And the more I can bring that positive sense of energy and the positive sense of the pie is bigger and there's enough for everyone and have a belief in that, that I can help make a situation better, then I can bring that into the room and begin to have those impacts on those around me. And as I was saying earlier, you know, that cascading of zeros and ones that a computer system uses to create some large output, we can all together make this large change occur, but it's really happening one person at a time. I mean, that's what change is about. It's, I think of it as winning the hearts and the minds of people one person at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just takes one person to start that happening.
Great. Well, Faith, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, you're welcome.
Where can listeners find out more about these ideas?
I have my own blog. It's called Ponderings and Insights, and it's within my business, which is www.synergetic-solutions.com. Again, the business name is Synergetic Solutions, www.synergetic-solutions.com. And then if you go under the menu item called Ponderings and Insights, there are a number of articles in there, and there's a category in there called Change Revolution. I'm also doing some writing, and we'll see which book pops out of me first.
I'll be curious to see which one it is.
I am. I changed my mind this morning. We'll see. I have the, you know, want to talk about courage, want to talk about this internal alignment. And it's I'm on my own sort of personal mission to drive positive change in the ways that I can in those around me. So it's a daily activity. So,
well, thanks again for being here. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks, Heather. And good luck to everybody as you drive change in the world around you.
So tune in next time to hear more ideas and insights about organizational change. In the meantime, if you would like to find additional resources and to see how we might work together to influence change in your organization, please visit www.enclaria.com. Thank you so much for listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma. Take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey.
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy.
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky.
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty.
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy.
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer odor control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey.
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy.
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky.
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty.
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy.
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer odor control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty. Yeah.